We've been too long apart, Mother Superior. Odrade's first impression was oddly jumbled. Candor and concealment. Shiana stood quietly receptive. This descendant of Siona Atreides had developed an interesting face under the Bene Gesserit patina. Maturity working on her according to both sisterhood and Atreides' designs. Marks of many decisions firmly taken. The slender, dark-skinned waif with sun-streaked brown hair had become this poised, reverend mother. Skin still dark from long hours in the open. Hair still sun-streaked. The eyes, though. The steely, total blue that said, I have been through the agony. What is it I sense in her? Shiana saw the look on Odrade's face. Bene Gesserit naivete. And knew this was the long-feared confrontation. There can be no defense except my truth, and I hope she stops short of a full confession. Odrade watched her former student with exquisite care, every sense open. Fear? What do I sense? Something when she spoke? The steadiness of Shiana's voice had been shaped into the powerful instrument Odrade had anticipated at their first meeting. Shiana's original nature, a Fremen nature, if there ever was one, had been curbed and redirected. That core of vindictiveness smoothed out. Her capacity for love and hatred brought under tight reins. Why do I get the impression she wants to hug me? Odrade felt suddenly vulnerable. This woman has been inside my defenses. No way to exclude her totally ever again. Tamerlane's judgment came to mind. She is one of those who keeps herself to herself. Remember Sister Xuanyu? Like that one, but better at it. Shiana knows where she is going. We'll have to watch her carefully. Atreides' blood, you know. I'm Atreides too, Tam. Don't think we ever forget it. You think we just stand idly by if Mother Superior chose to breed on her own? There are limits to our tolerance, Dar. Indeed, this visit is long overdue, Shiana. Odrade's tone alerted Shiana. She stared back suddenly with that look the sisterhood called B.G. Placid, than which there probably was nothing more placid in the universe, nothing more completely a mask of what occurred behind it. This was not just a barrier, it was a nothing. Anything on this mask would be transgression. This in itself was betrayal. Shiana realized it immediately and responded with laughter. I knew you would come probing. The hand talk with Duncan, right? Please, Mother Superior, accept this. All of it, Shiana. He wants someone to rescue them if honored maters attack. That's all. Does she think me a complete fool? No. He wants information about our intentions and what we're doing to meet the honored mater threat. What have you told him? Everything I could. Truth is my only weapon. I must divert her. Are you his friend at court, Shiana? Yes. So am I. But not Tam and Bell. My informants tell me Bell now tolerates him. Bell? Tolerant? You misjudge her, Shiana. It's a flaw in you. She is hiding something. What have you done, Shiana? Shiana, do you think you could work with Bell? Because I tease her. Work with Bell? What does she mean? Not Bell to head that damnable Missionaria project. A faint twitching lifted the corners of Odrade's mouth. Another prank? Could that be it? Shiana was a prime gossip subject in Central's dining rooms. Stories of how she teased breeding mistresses, especially Belle. and elaborately detailed accounts of seductions fleshed out with honored mater comparisons from Herbella, spiced more than the food. Odred had heard snatches of the later story only 2 days ago. She said I use the let him misbehave method. Very effective with men who think they're leading you down the garden path. Tease, is that what you do, Shiana? An appropriate word. Reshape by going against the natural inclination. The instant the words were out of her mouth, Shiana knew she had made a mistake. Odred felt warning stillness. Reshape. Her gaze went to that odd black mound in the corner. She stared at it with a fixity that surprised her. It drank vision. She kept probing for coherence, something that spoke to her. Nothing responded, not even when she probed to her limits. And that's its purpose. It's called void, Shiana said. Yours? Please, Shiana, say someone else did it. The one who did this has gone where I cannot follow. I did it one night about a week ago. Is black plaz the only thing you reshape? A fascinating comment on art in general. And not on art specific. I have a problem with you, Shiana. You alarm some sisters. And me. There's a wild place in you we have not found. Atreides gene markers Duncan told us to seek are in your cells. What have they given you? Alarm my sisters? Especially when they recall that you're the youngest ever to survive the agony. Except for abominations. Is that what you are? Mother Superior! She has never deliberately hurt me except as a lesson. You went through the agony as an act of disobedience. Wouldn't you say rather that I went against mature advice? Humor sometimes distracts her. Prester, Shiana's acolyte aide, came to the door and rapped lightly on the wall beside it until she had their attention. You said I was to tell you immediately when the search teams returned. What do they report? Relief in Shiana's voice? Team 8 wants you to look at their scans. They always want that. Shiana spoke with forced frustration. Do you want to look at the scans with me, Mother Superior? I'll wait here. This won't take long. When they had gone, Odred went to the western window, a clear view across rooftops to the new desert. Small dunes here. Almost sunset, and that dry heat so reminiscent of Dune. What is Shiana hiding? A young man, hardly more than a boy, had been sunning nude on a neighboring rooftop, face up on a sea-green mattress with a golden towel across his face. His skin was a sun-warmed gold to match towel and pubic hair. A breeze touched a corner of the towel and lifted it. One languid hand came up and restored the cover. How can he be idle? Night worker? Probably. Idleness was not encouraged, and this was flaunting it. Odred smiled to herself. Anyone could be excused for assuming he was a night worker. He might be depending on that specific guess. The trick would be to remain unseen by those who knew otherwise. I will not ask. Intelligence deserves some rewards. And after all, he could be a night worker. She lifted her gaze. A new pattern emerging here. Exotic sunsets. Narrow band of orange drawn along the horizon, bulging where the sun had just dipped below the land. Silvery blue above the orange went darker overhead. She had seen this many times on Dune. Meteorological explanations she did not care to explore. Better to let eyes absorb this transient beauty. Better to permit ears and skin to feel sudden stillness descend upon this land in the quick darkness after the orange vanished. faintly she saw the young man pick up mattress and towel and vanish behind a ventilator. A sound of running in the corridor behind her. Shiana entered almost breathless. They found a spice mass 30 clicks northeast of us, small but compact. Odraid did not dare hope. Could it be wind accumulation? Not likely. I've set a round-the-clock watch on it. Shiana glanced at the window where Odraid stood. She has seen Trebo, perhaps. I asked you earlier, Shiana, if you could work with Bell. It was an important question. Tam is getting very old and must be replaced soon. There must be a vote, of course. Me? It was totally unexpected. My first choice. Imperative now. I want you close where I can keep watch on you. But I thought, the Missionaria's plan. That can wait. And there must be someone else who can shepherd worms, if that spice mass is what we hope. Oh? Yes. Several of our people, but no one who... Don't you want me to test whether the worms still respond to me? Work on the council should not interfere with that. You can see I'm surprised. I would have said shocked. Tell me, Shiana, what really interests you these days? Still probing. Trebo, serve me now. Making sure the desert grows well? Truth. And my sex life, of course. You saw the young man on the roof next door? Trebo. A new one Duncan sent me for polishing. Even after Odraid had gone, Shiana wondered why those words had aroused such merriment. Mother Superior had been deflected, though. No need even to waste her fallback position. Truth. We've been discussing the possibility that I might imprint Teg and restore the Bashar's memories that way. Full confession avoided. Mother Superior did not learn that I have weaseled out the way to reactivate our Nosha prison and defuse the mines Balanda put in it. No sweeteners will cloak some forms of bitterness. If it tastes bitter, spit it out. That's what our earliest ancestors did. The Coda. Mirbella found herself arising in the night to continue a dream, although quite awake and aware of her surroundings. Duncan asleep beside her, faint ticking of machinery. The chrono projection on the ceiling. She insisted on Duncan's presence at night lately, fearful when alone. He blamed the fourth pregnancy. She sat on the edge of the bed. The room was ghostly in the dim light of the chrono. Dream images persisted. Duncan grumbled and rolled toward her. An outflung arm draped itself across her legs. She felt that this mental intrusion was not dream stuff, but it had some of those characteristics. Bene Gesserit teachings did this. Them and their damn suggestions about Saitali and everything. They precipitated motion she could not control. Tonight she was lost in an insane world of words. The cause was clear. Balanda that morning had learned Mirbella spoke 9 languages, and had aimed the suspicious acolyte down a mental path called linguistic heritage. But Bell's influence on this nighttime madness provided no escape. Nightmare. She was a creature of microscopic size, trapped in an enormous, echoing place labeled in giant letters wherever she turned. Data Reservoir. Animated words with grimacing jaws and fearsome tentacles surrounded her. Predatory beasts, and she was their prey. Awake and knowing, she sat on the edge of her bed with Duncan's arm on her legs. She still saw the beasts. They herded her backward. She knew she was going backward, although her body did not move. They pressed her toward a terrible disaster she could not see. Her head would not turn. Not only did she see these creatures, they hid parts of her sleeping chamber, but she heard them in a cacophony of her 9 languages. "They will tear me apart." Although she could not turn, she sensed what lay behind her. More teeth and claws. Threat all around. If they cornered her, they would pounce and she was doomed. Done for. Dead. Victim. Torture captive. Fair game. Despair filled her. Why would Duncan not awaken and save her? His arm was a lead weight, part of the force holding her, and allowing these creatures to herd her into their bizarre trap. She trembled. Perspiration poured from her body. Awful words. They united into giant combinations. A creature with knife-fanged mouth came directly toward her, and she saw more words in the gaping blackness between its jaws. "See above." Mirbella began to laugh. She had no control of it. "See above. Done for. Dead. Victim." The laughter awakened Duncan. He sat up, activated a low glow globe, and stared at her. How tousled he looked after their earlier sexual collision. His expression hovered between amusement and upset at being awakened. "Why are you laughing?" Laughter subsided in gasps. Her sides ached. She was afraid his tentative smile would ignite a new spasm. "Oh, oh, Duncan! Sexual collision!" He knew this was their mutual term for the addiction that bound them. But why would it make her laugh? His puzzled expression struck her as ludicrous. Between gasps, she said, "Two more words." And she had to clamp her mouth closed to prevent another outburst. "What?" His voice was the funniest thing she had ever heard. She thrust a hand at him and shook her head. "Oh! Oh! Mirbella, what's wrong with you?" She could only continue shaking her head. He tried a tentative smile. It gentled her, and she leaned against him. "No!" when his right hand wandered. "I just want to be close." "Look what time it is." He lifted his chin toward the ceiling projection. "Almost 3. It was so funny, Duncan." "So tell me about it." "When I catch my breath." He eased her down onto her pillow. "Like a damned old married couple. Funny stories in the middle of the night." "No, darling, we're different." "A question of degree, nothing else." "Quality," she insisted. "What was so funny?" She recounted her nightmare and Balanda's influence. "Zen Suni, very ancient technique. The sisters use it to rid you of trauma connections. Words that ignite unconscious responses." Fear returned. "Mirbella, why are you trembling?" "Honored Mater teachers warned us terrible things would happen if we fell into Zensuni hands." "Bullcrap. I went through the same thing as a Mentat." His words conjured another dream fragment. A beast with 2 heads, both mouths open. Words in there. On the left, 1 word, and on the right, leads to another. Mirth displaced fear. It subsided without laughter. "Duncan?" "Hmm?" Mentat distance in the sound. "Bell said the Bene Gesserit use words as weapons. Voice. Tools of control," she called them. "A lesson you must learn almost as instinct. They'll never trust you into the deeper training until you learn this." "And I won't trust you afterward." She rolled away from him and looked at the comeyes glittering in the ceiling around the time projection. "I'm still on probation." She was aware her teachers discussed her privately. Conversations were choked off when she approached. They stared at her in their special way, as though she were an interesting specimen, Melanda's voice cluttered her mind. Nightmare tendrils. Mid-morning, then, and the sweat of her own exertions a stink in her nostrils. Probationer a dutiful 3 paces from Reverend Mother. Bell's voice. Never be an expert. That locks you up tight. All of this because I asked if there were no words to guide the Bene Gesserit. Duncan, why do they mix mental and physical teaching? Mind and body reinforce each other. Sleepy. Damn him, he's going back to sleep. She shook Duncan's shoulder. If words are so damned unimportant, why do they talk about disciples so much? Patterns, he mumbled. Dirty word. What? She shook him more roughly. He turned onto his back, moving his lips, then... Discipline equals pattern equals bad way to go. They say we're all natural pattern creators. Means order to them, I think. Why is that so bad? Gives others handle to destroy us, or traps us in things we won't change. You're wrong about mind and body. It's pressures locking one to the other. Isn't that what I said? Hey, are we going to talk or sleep or what? No more or what. Not tonight. A deep sigh lifted his chest. They're not out to improve my health, she said. Nobody said they were. That comes later. After the agony. She knew he hated reminders of that deadly trial, but there was no avoiding it. The prospect filled her mind. All right. He sat up, punched his pillow into shape, and leaned back against it to study her. What's up? They're so damned clever with their word weapons. She brought Teg to you and said you were fully responsible for him. You don't believe it. He thinks of you as his father. Not really. No, but did you think that about the Bashar? When he restored my memories? Yeah. You're a pair of intellectual orphans, always looking for parents who aren't there. He hasn't the faintest idea of how much you will hurt him. That tends to split up the family. So you hate the Bashar in him, and you're glad you'll hurt him. Didn't say that. Why is he so important? The Bashar? Military genius. Always doing the unexpected. Confounds his foes by appearing where they never expect him to be. Can't anyone do that? Not the way he does it. He invents tactics and strategies. Just like that. Snapping his fingers. More violence. Just like honored Maters. Not always. Bashar had a reputation for winning without battle. I've seen the histories. Don't trust them. But you just said... Histories focus on confrontations. Some truth in that. But it hides more persistent things that go on in spite of upheavals. Persistent things? What history touches the woman in the rice paddy driving her water buffalo ahead of her plow, while her husband is off somewhere, most likely a conscript, carrying a weapon? Why is that persistent and more important than... Her babies at home need food. Man's away on this perennial madness. Someone has to do the plowing. She's a true image of human persistence. You sound so bitter. I find that odd. Considering my military history? That, yes. The Bene Gesserit emphasis on their Bashar and elite troops and... You think they're just more self-important people going on about their self-important violence? They'll ride right over the woman with her plow? Why not? Because very little escapes them. The violent ones ride past the plowing woman and seldom see they have touched basic reality. A Bene Gesserit would never miss such a thing. Again, why not? the self-important have limited vision because they ride a death reality. Woman and plow are life reality. Without life reality, there'd be no humankind. My tyrant saw this. The sisters bless him for it, even while they curse him. So you're a willing participant in their dream? I guess I am. He sounded surprised. And you're being completely honest with Teg? He asks. I give him candid answers. I don't believe in doing violence to curiosity. And you have full responsibility for him? That isn't exactly what she said. Ah, my love. Not exactly what she said. You call Belle hypocrites and don't include Odrade. Duncan, if you only knew. As long as we're ignoring the Comais, spit it out. Lies, cheating, vicious. Hey, the Bene Gesserit? They have that hoary old excuse. Sister A does it, so if I do it, that's not so bad. Two crimes cancel each other. What crimes? She hesitated. Should I tell him? No. But he expects some answer. Belle's delighted the roles are reversed between you and Teg. She's looking forward to his pain. Maybe we should disappoint her. He knew it was a mistake to say this as soon as it was out. Too soon. Poetic justice! Mirbella was delighted. Divert them. They aren't interested in justice. Fairness, yes. They have this homily. Those against whom judgment is passed must accept the fairness of it. So they condition you to accept their judgment. There are loopholes in any system. You know, darling, acolytes learn things. That's why they're acolytes. I mean, we talk to one another. We? You're an acolyte? You're a proselyte? Whatever I am, I've heard stories. Your Teg may not be what he seems. Acolyte gossip. There are stories out of Gamu, Duncan. He stared at her. Gamu? He could never think of it by any name other than the original. Gaiety Prime. Harkonnen Hellhole. She took his silence as an invitation to continue. They say Teg moved faster than the eye could see. That he probably started those stories himself. Some sisters don't discount them. They're taking a wait-and-see attitude. They want precautions. Haven't you learned anything about Teg from your precious histories? It would be typical of him to start such rumors, make people cautious. But remember, I was on Gamu then. Honored maters were very upset, enraged. Something went wrong. Sure, Teg did the unexpected, surprised them, stole one of their no-ships. He patted the wall beside him. This one. The Sisterhood has its forbidden ground, Duncan. They're always telling me to wait for the agony. All will become clear, damn them. Sounds like they're preparing you for the Missionaria teaching. Engineer religions for specific purposes and selected populations. You don't see anything wrong in that? Morality? I don't argue that with Reverend Mothers. Why not? Religions founder on that rock. BGs don't founder. Duncan, if you only knew their morality. It annoys them that you know so much about them. Belle only wanted to kill me because of it. You don't think Odrade is just as bad? What a question! Odrade? A terrifying woman if you let yourself dwell on her abilities. Atreides, for all that. I've known Atreides and Atreides. This one is Bene Gesserit first. Teg's the Atreides ideal. Odrade told me she trusts your loyalty to the Atreides. I'm loyal to Atreides' honor, Mirbella. And I make my own moral decisions about the Sisterhood, about this child they've thrust into my care, about Shiana, and about my beloved. Mirbella bent close to him, breast brushing his arm, and whispered in his ear, Sometimes I could kill any of them within my reach. Does she think they can't hear? He sat upright, dragging her with him. What set you off? She wants me to work on Saitali. Work on. Honored mater euphemism. Well, why not? She worked on plenty of men before she ran afoul of me. But he had an antique husband's reaction. Not only that. Saitali. A damn Tlilazu. Mother Superior? He had to be sure. The one, the only. Almost light-hearted now that she had unburdened herself. What's your reaction? She says it was your idea. My... no way. I suggested we could try to pry information out of him, but... She says it's an ordinary thing for the Bene Gesserit, just as it is with honored maters. Go breed with this one. Seduce that one. All in a day's work. I asked for your reaction. Revolted. Why? Knowing your background. It's you I love, Duncan, and my body is to give you pleasure. Just as you... We're an old married couple, and the witches are trying to pry us apart. His words ignited in him a clear vision of Lady Jessica, lover of his long-dead duke and mother of Moabdib. I loved her. She didn't love me, but... The look he saw now in Morbella's eyes, he had seen Jessica look at the Duke that way. Blind, unswerving love. The thing the Bene Gesserit distrusted. Jessica had been softer than Morbella. Hard to the core, though. And Odraid, she was hard at the beginning. Plasteel all the way. Then what of the times when he had suspected her of sharing human emotions? The way she spoke of the Bashar, when they learned the old man was dead on Dune. He was my father, you know. Mirbella dragged him out of reverie. You may share their dream, whatever that is, but... Grow up, humans! What? That's their dream. Start acting like adults, and not like angry children in a schoolyard. Mama knows best? Yes, I believe she does. Is that how you really see them? Even when you call them witches? It's a good word. Witches do mysterious things. You don't believe it's the long and severe training, plus the spice and the agony? What's belief have to do with it? Unknowns create their own mystique. But you don't think they trick people into doing what they want? Sure they do. Words as weapons, voice, imprinters. None as beautiful as you. What's beauty, Duncan? There are styles in beauty, sure. Exactly what she says. Styles based on procreative roots buried so deeply in our racial psyche, we dare not remove them. So they've thought of meddling there, Duncan. And they might dare anything? She says we won't distort our progeny into what we judge to be non-human. They judge, they condemn. He thought of the alien figures in his vision, face dancers, and he asked, like the amoral Tlilazu? Amoral, not human. I can almost hear the gears whirling in Odraid's head, she and her sisters. They watch, they listen, they tailor every response, everything calculated. Is that what you want, my darling? He felt trapped. She was right, and she was wrong. Ends justifying means. How could he justify losing Mirbella? You think them amoral? He asked. It was as though she did not hear. Always asking themselves what to say next to get the desired response. What response? Couldn't she hear his pain? You never know until too late. She turned and looked at him. Exactly like honored maters. Do you know how honored maters trapped me? He could not suppress awareness of how avidly the watchdogs would hang on Mirbella's next words. I was picked off the streets after an honored mater sweep. I think the whole sweep was because of me. My mother was a great beauty, but she was too old for them. a sweep? The watchdogs would want me to ask. They go through an area and people disappear. No bodies, nothing. Whole families vanish. It's explained as punishment because people plot against them. How old were you? 3, maybe 4. I was playing with friends in an open place under trees. Suddenly there was a lot of noise and shouting. We hid in a hole behind some rocks. He was caught in a vision of this drama. The ground shook. Her gaze went inward with the memory. Explosions. After a while, it was quiet, and we peeked out. The whole corner where my house had been was a hole. You were orphaned? I remember my parents. He was a big, robust fellow. I think my mother was a servant somewhere. They wore uniforms for such jobs, and I remember her in uniform. How can you be sure your parents were killed? The sweep is all I know for sure, but they're always the same. There was screaming and people running about. We were terrified. Why do you think the sweep was because of you? They do that sort of thing. They. What a victory the watchers would count in that one word. Mirbella was still deep in memory. I think my father refused to succumb to an honored mater. That was always considered dangerous. Big, handsome man. Strong. So you hate them? Why? Really surprised by his question. Without that, I would never have been an honored mater. Her callousness shocked him. So it was worth anything. Love, do you resent whatever brought me to your side? Touché. But don't you wish it had happened some other way? It happened. What utter fatalism! He had never suspected this in her. Was it honored mater conditioning, or something the Bene Gesserit did? You were just a valuable addition to their stables. Right, enticers, they called us. We recruited valuable males, and you did. I repaid their investment many times over. Do you realize how the sisters will interpret this? Don't make a big thing of it. So you're ready to work on Saitali? I didn't say that. Honored maters manipulated me without my consent. The sisters need me and want to use me the same way. My price may be too high. He was a moment speaking past a dry throat. Price? She glared at him. You're just part of my price. No working on Saitali. And more of their famous candor about why they need me. Careful, love, they might tell you. She turned an almost Bene Gesserit stare toward him. How could you restore Teg's memories without pain? Damn. And just when he thought they were free of that slip, no escape. He could see in her eyes that she guessed. Mirbella confirmed this. Since I would not agree, I'm sure you've discussed it with Shiana. He could only nod. His Mirbella had gone farther into the sisterhood than he suspected, and she knew how his multiple Gola memories had been restored by her imprinting. He suddenly saw her as a reverend mother and wanted to cry out against it. How does this make you different from Odraid? She asked. Shiana was trained as an imprinter. His words felt empty even as he spoke. That's different from my training? Accusing. Anger flared in him. You'd prefer the pain, like Bell? You'd prefer the defeat of the Bene Gesserit? Voice milky soft. He heard the distance in her tone, as though she already had retreated into the cold observational stance of the sisterhood. They were freezing his lovely Mirbella. There was still that vitality in her, though. It tore at him. She gave off an aura of health, especially in pregnancy. Vigor and boundless enjoyment of life. It glowed in her. the sisters would take that and dampen it. She became quiet under his watchful stare. Desperate, he wondered what he could do. "I had hoped we were being more open with each other lately," she said. Another Bene Gesserit probe. "I disagree with many of their actions, but I don't distrust their motives," he said. "I'll know their motives if I live through the agony." He went very still, caught in realization that she might not survive. Life without Mirbella, yawning emptiness deeper than anything he had ever imagined. Nothing in his many lives compared with it. Without conscious volition, he reached out and caressed her back, skin so soft and yet resilient. "I love you too much, Mirbella. That's my agony." She trembled under his touch. He found himself wallowing in sentimentality, building an image of grief, until he recalled the Mentat teacher's words about emotional binges. The difference between sentiment and sentimentality is easy to see. When you avoid killing somebody's pet on the glazeway, that's sentiment. If you swerve to avoid the pet, and that causes you to kill pedestrians, that is sentimentality. She took his caressing hand and pressed it against her lips. "Words plus body, more than either," he whispered. His words plunged her back into nightmare, but now she went with a vengeance, aware of words as tools. She was filled with special relish for the experience, willingness to laugh at herself. As she exercised the nightmare, it occurred to her that she had never seen an honored mater laugh at herself. Holding his hand, she stared down at Duncan, Mentat flickering of his eyelids. Did he realize what she had just experienced? Freedom. It no longer was a question of how she had been confined and driven into inevitable channels by her past. For the first time since accepting the possibility that she could become a reverend mother, she glimpsed what it might mean. She felt awe and shock. Nothing more important than the sisterhood. They spoke of an oath, something more mysterious than the proctor's words at the acolyte initiation. "My oath to honored maters was only words. An oath to the Bene Gesserit can be no more." She remembered Belanda growling that diplomats were chosen for ability to lie. "Would you be another diplomat, Mirbella?" It was not that oaths were made to be broken. How childish. Schoolyard threat. "If you break your word, I'll break mine. Nya, nya, nya." Futile to worry about oaths. Far more important to find that place in herself where freedom lived. It was a place where something always listened. Cupping Duncan's hand against her lips, she whispered, "They listen. Oh, how they listen." Enter no conflict against fanatics, unless you can diffuse them. Oppose a religion with another religion, only if your proofs, miracles, are irrefutable. Or if you can mesh in a way that the fanatics accept you as God-inspired. There has long been the barrier to science assuming a mantle of divine revelation. Science is so obviously man-made. Fanatics, and many are fanatic on one subject or another, must know where you stand, but more important, must recognize who whispers in your ear. Missionaria Protectiva, primary teaching. The flow of time nagged at Odrade, as much as did constant awareness of the hunters approaching. Years passed so quickly that days became a blur. 2 months of arguments to gain approval of Shiana as successor to Tam. Belanda had taken to standing day watch when Odrade was absent, as she had been today, briefing a new Bene Gesserit remnant being sent scattering. The council continued this, but with reluctance. Idaho's suggestion that it was a futile strategy had sent shockwaves through the sisterhood. Briefings now carried new defensive plans for what you may encounter. When Odrade entered the workroom late in the afternoon, Balanda sat at the table. Her cheeks looked puffy, and her eyes had that hard stare they got when she suppressed fatigue. With Bell here, the daily summation would include sharp comments. "They've approved Shiana," she said, pushing a small crystal toward Odrade. "Tam's support did it. And Rebella's new one will be born in 8 days. So the Sooks claim." Bell had little faith in Sook doctors. New one? She could be so damned impersonal about life. Odrade found her pulses quickening at the prospect. "When Mirbella recovers from this birth, the agony, she is ready." "Duncan's extremely nervous," Balanda said, vacating the chair. "Duncan, yet. Those two are getting remarkably familiar." Bell was not finished. "And before you ask, no word from Dortuila." Odrade took her seat behind the table and balanced the report crystal on her palm. Dortuila's trusted acolyte, now Reverend Mother Fintle, would not risk the no-ship journey, or any of the other message devices they had prepared, just to stroke a Mother Superior. No news meant the bait was still out there, or wasted. "Have you told Shiana she's confirmed?" Odrade asked. "I left that for you. She's late with her daily report again. Not right for someone on the council." So Bell still disapproved the appointment. Shiana's daily messages had taken on a repetitious note. No worm sign. Spice mass intact. Everything upon which they pinned their hopes lay in terrible suspension, and nightmare hunters crept closer. Tensions accumulated. Explosive. "You've seen that exchange between Duncan and Mirbella enough times," Balanda said. "Is that what Shiana was hiding? And if so, why? Teg was my father. Such delicacy. A reverend mother has qualms about imprinting the gola of Mother Superior's father. She was my personal student, Bell. She has concerns for me you could not feel. Besides, this is not just a gola. This is a child. We must be certain of her." Odrade saw the name form on Balanda's lips, but it remained unspoken. Jessica. Another flawed Reverend Mother? Bell was right. They must be sure of Shiana. My responsibility. A vision of Shiana's black sculpture flickered in Odrade's awareness. "Idaho's plan has some attraction, but..." Balanda hesitated. Odrade spoke up. "This is a very young child. Growth incomplete. Pain of the usual memory restoration could approach the agony. It might alienate him. But this... control him with an imprinter. That part I approve. But what if it doesn't restore his memories?" "We still have the original plan. And it did have that effect on Idaho." "Different for him, but the decision can wait. You're late for your meeting with Saitali." Odrade hefted the crystal. "Daily summation? Nothing you haven't seen too many times already." From Bell, that was almost a note of concern. "I'll bring him back here. Have Tam waiting, and you come in later on some pretext." Saitali had become almost accustomed to these walks outside the ship, and Odrade observed this in his casual manner when they emerged from her transporter south of Central. It was more than a stroll, and they both knew it, but she had made these excursions regular, designing repetition to lull him. Routine. So useful on occasion. "Kind of you to take me for these walks," Saitali said, looking up sideways. "The air is drier than I recall it. Where do we go this evening?" How tiny his eyes when he squinted against the sun. "To my workroom." she nodded at outbuildings of Central about half a click north. It was cold under a cloudless spring sky, and warm colors of roofs, lights coming on in her tower, beckoned with promise of relief from a chilling wind that accompanied almost every sunset these days. With peripheral attention, Odrade watched the Tlilazu beside her carefully. Such tension. She could feel this also in guardian reverend mothers and acolytes close behind them, all charged to special watchfulness by Belanda. We need this little monster, and he knows it. And we still don't know the extent of Tlilazu abilities. What talents has he accumulated? Why does he probe with such evident casualness for contact with his fellow prisoners? Tlilazu made the Idaho Gola, she reminded herself. Did they hide secret things in him? I am a beggar come to your door, Mother Superior, he said in that whining elfin voice. Our planet's in ruins, my people slain. Why do we go to your quarters? To bargain in more pleasant surroundings. Yes, it is very confining in the ship, but I do not understand why we always leave the car so far away from Central. Why do we walk? I find it refreshing. Saitali glanced around him at the plantings. Pleasant, but quite cold, don't you think? Odrade glanced to the south. These southern slopes were planted to grapes, crests and colder northern faces reserved for orchards. Improved vinifera, these vineyards. Developed by Bene Gesserit gardeners. Old vines, roots gone down to hell, where according to ancient superstition they stole water from burning souls. The winery was underground, as were storage and aging caves. Nothing to mar a landscape of tended vines in orderly rows, plantings just far enough apart for pickers and tilling equipment. Pleasant to him. She doubted Saitali saw anything pleasing here. He was probably nervous, as she wanted him to be, asking himself, why does she really choose to walk me through these rustic surroundings? It galled Odrade that they dared not employ more powerful Bene Gesserit persuasives on this little man. But she agreed with advice that said if those efforts failed, they would not get a second chance. Tlilazu had demonstrated they would die rather than give up secret and sacred knowledge. Several things puzzle me, Odrade said, picking her way around a pile of vine trimmings as she spoke. Why do you insist on having your own face dancers before acceding to our requests? And what is this interest in Duncan, Idaho? Dear lady, I have no companions in my loneliness. That answers both questions. He rubbed absently at his breast, where the nolentropy capsule lay concealed. Why does he rub himself there so frequently? It was a gesture she and analysts had puzzled over. No scar, no skin inflammation. Perhaps merely a carryover from childhood. But that was so long ago. A flaw in this reincarnation? No one could say. And that gray skin carried a metallic pigmentation that resisted probing instruments. He was sure to have been sensitized to heavier rays and would know those were used. No. Now it was all diplomacy. Damn this little monster. Saitali wondered, did this Powinda female have no natural sympathies on which he could play? Typicals were ambivalent on that question. The Wecht of Jandola is no more, he said. Billions of us slain by those whores. To the farthest reaches of the Yagist, we are destroyed, and only I remain. Yagist, she thought, land of the unruled. It was a revealing word in Islamyat, the Bene Tlilak's language. In that language, she said, the magic of our god is our only bridge. Once more she claimed to share his great belief, the Sufi Zen Sunni ecumenism that had spawned the Beni Tlilaks. She spoke the language flawlessly, knew the proper words, but he saw falsehoods. She calls God's messenger tyrant and disobeys the most basic precepts. Where did these women meet in Kel to feel the presence of God? If they truly spoke the language of God, they would already know what they sought from him with crude bargaining. As they climbed the last slope to the paved landing at Central, Saitali called on God for help. The Beni Tlilaks come to this. Why have you put this trial upon us? We are the last legalists of the Shariat, and I, the last master of my people, must seek answers from you, God, when you no longer can speak to me in Kel. Once more in flawless Islamiyat, Odred said, You were betrayed by your own people, ones you sent into the scattering. You have no more Malik brothers, only sisters. Then where is your Sagra chamber, Pawinda deceiver? Where is a deep and windowless place only brothers may enter? This is a new thing for me, he said. Malik sisters. Those two words have always been self-negating. Sisters cannot be Malik. Waf, your late Mahai and Abdul had trouble with that, and he led your people almost to extinction. Almost? You know of survivors? He could not keep excitement from his voice. No, masters, but we hear of a few Domel, and all in honored mater hands. She paused where the edge of a building would cut off their view of the setting sun in the next steps, and, still in the secret language of the Tlilazu, said, The sun is not God. The dawn and sunset cry of the Mahai. Saitali felt faith wavering as he followed her into an arched passage between two squat buildings. Her words were proper, but only the Mahai and Abdul should utter them. In the shadowy passage, footsteps of their escort close behind, Odred confounded him by saying, Why did you not say the proper words? Are you not the last master? Does that not make you Mahai and Abdul? I was not chosen so by Malik brothers. It sounded weak even to him. Odred summoned a lift field and paused at the tube slot. In other memory detail, she found Kel and its rite of Gufran familiar, words whispered in the night by lovers of long-dead women. And then we. And so if we speak these sacred words, Gufran, acceptance and readmission of one who had ventured among Pawinda, the returned one begging pardon for contact with unimaginable sins of aliens. The Mashik have met in Kel and felt the presence of their god. The tube slot opened. Odred motioned Saitali and two guards ahead. As he passed, she thought, Something must give soon. We cannot play our little game to the end he desires. Tamerlane stood at the bow window, her back to the door when Odred and Saitali entered the workroom. Sunset light slanted sharply across rooftops. The brilliance vanished then and left behind it a sense of contrast, the night darker because of that last glow along the horizon. In the milky gloom, Odred waved the guards away, noting their reluctance. Balanda had charged them to stay, obviously, but they would not disobey Mother Superior. She indicated a chair dog across from her and waited for him to sit. He looked back suspiciously at Tamerlane before sinking into the dog, but covered it by saying, Why are there no lights? This is a relaxing interlude, she said, and I know darkness worries you. She stood a moment behind her table, identifying bright patches in the gloom, a luster of artifacts placed around her to make this her setting, the bust of long-dead Chenoe in its niche beside the window. And there, on the wall at her right, a pastoral landscape from the first human migrations into space, a stack of Redulian crystals on the table, and a silvery reflection of her light scribe, concentrating faint illumination from the windows. He has roasted long enough. She touched a plate on her console. Glow globes set strategically around walls and ceiling came to life. Tamerlane turned on cue, her robe swishing deliberately. She stood 2 paces behind Saitali, the very picture of ominous Bene Gesserit mystery. Saitali twitched slightly at Tamerlane's movement, but now he sat quietly. The chair dog was somewhat too large for him, and he looked almost childlike there. Odrade said, "Sisters who rescued you say you commanded a no-ship at Junction, preparing for the first fold-space leap when Honored Maters attacked. You were coming to your ship in a one-man skitter, they said, and veered away just before the explosions. You detected the attackers?"
"Yes,"
reluctance in his voice. "And knew they might locate the no-ship from your trajectory, so you fled, leaving your brothers to be destroyed." He spoke with the utter bitterness of a tragic witness. "Earlier, when we were outbound from Tlilax, we saw that attack begin. Our explosions to destroy everything of value to attackers, and the burners from space, created the Holocaust. We fled then, too. But not directly to Junction. Everywhere we searched, they had been before us. They had the ashes, but I had our secrets. Remind her that I still have something of value to trade." He tapped a finger against his head. "You sought Guild or Chome Sanctuary at Junction," she said. "How fortunate our spy ship was there to scoop you up before the enemy could react."
"Sister..." How difficult, that word.
"If you truly are my sister in Kel, why will you not provide me with Face Dancer's servants?" "Still too many secrets between us, I tell you. Why, for instance, were you leaving Bandalong when attackers came?"
"Bandalong?"
Naming the great Lilac city constricted his chest, and he thought he felt the Nullentropy capsule pulse, as though it sought release for its precious contents. "Lost Bandalong. Never again to see the city of Carnelian skies. Never to feel the presence of brothers, of patient Omel, and..." "Are you ill?" Odrade asked.
"I am sick with what I have lost."
He heard fabric slither behind him and sensed Tamerlane closer. How oppressive it was in this place.
"Why is she behind me?"
"I am the servant of my sisters, and she is here to observe us both." "You've taken some of my cells, haven't you? You're growing a replacement, Saitali, in your tanks." "Of course we are. You don't think sisters would let the last master end here, do you?"
"No goal of me will do anything I would not."
"And it will carry no Nullentropy tube." "We know. But what is it we do not know?"
"This is not bargaining," he complained.
"You misjudge me, Saitali. We know when you lie and when you conceal. We employ senses others do not." It was true. They detected things from odors of his body, from small movements of muscles, expressions he could not suppress.
"Sisters?
These creatures are Pawinda, all of them." "You were on Lashkar," Odrade prodded.
"Lashkar.
How he wished he were here on Lashkar. Face Dance warriors, Domel assistants, eliminating this abominable evil." But he dared not lie. The one behind him probably was a truthsayer. Experience in many lives told him Bene Gesserit truthsayers were the best. "I commanded a force of Kasadars. We sought a herd of Futars for our defense."
"Herd?
Did Tlilazu know something of Futars not revealed to the Sisterhood?" "You went prepared for violence. Did Honored Maters learn of your mission and cut you off?" "I think it likely."
"Why do you call them Honored Maters?"
His voice lapsed almost into a screech. "Because that is what they call themselves." Very calm now. Let him stew in his own mistakes.
She is right. We were betrayed.
Bitter thought. He held it close, wondering how he should reply. A small revelation. There is never a small revelation with these women. A sigh shook his breast. The null entropy capsule and its contents. His most important concern. Anything to get him access to his own axolotl tanks. Descendants of people we sent into the scattering returned with captive futars, a mingling of human and cat, as you doubtless know. But they did not reproduce in our tanks. And before we could determine why, the ones brought to us died. The betrayers brought us only two. We should have suspected. They didn't bring you very many futars, did they? You should have suspected they were bait.
See? That is what they do with small revelations.